fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Happy New Year and welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm sending sporty good wishes to all our Voice of America listeners for the coming year. I also want to say thanks to Dan Friedell for hosting the final four shows of 2019 and providing excellent support in the big chair throughout last year. As we look back on 2019, one of the big African sports stories was the Springboks of South Africa winning their third Rugby World Cup title. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight package for 2019, we kick off with a report from VOA's Anita Powell in Johannesburg.
The victory by South Africa's rugby team was momentous in more ways than one. The championship was the third world title for the Springboks, but the first time the team was led by a black captain, Siya Kolisi. His is an inspiring tale of triumph over the odds, from childhood in a poor black township to the head of South African rugby, traditionally a white-dominated sport. Longtime rugby fan Thando Makasi comes from Kolisi's hometown, Zwide. After watching the game at a Johannesburg bar, she says his life and leading the Springboks to victory are an inspiration.
I think it's a win overall. I think this tournament has just brought so much hope. I mean, South Africa, the year has been going, the change in presidency, the elections, and we come to this point where we really are rallying behind the box and we're one together, strong together, stronger together.
The win, many fans say, is reminiscent of the nation's 1995 Rugby World Cup triumph, when South Africa's first black president, Nelson Mandela, embraced the sport. South Africa ended the racist apartheid system in 1994. The next year, with racial tensions still fresh, Mandela walked onto the pitch, wearing a green and gold Springboks jersey to congratulate team captain Francois Pienaar. Their warm embrace showed this divided nation was on a path to racial reconciliation. In the crowds of rugby fans in Johannesburg, Nigel Ngwenya stands out. And not just because he plays rugby for the University of the Witwatersrand and weighs a solid 120 kilograms. Ngwenya is an England fan and wore their red jersey. But he gives the Springboks and Captain Kolisi their due.
They have that fighting spirit. They've got that never give up, never die spirit. Whatever you bring to the table, they try to catch up and actually do better, which they've been doing in the past games. Siya Kolisi, oh man, guys coming from far. Guys coming from far. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's a shame I'm not supporting. I would have preferred him to play for England. But
28-year-old Springboks fan Madi Rahuma says rugby is more than just a game of kicks and passes. It's about the soul of this nation.
South Africa is not about color. Well, since 1994, we are just trying. Eventually, we're getting there just to be South Africans. But one thing I love about sports, it always brings us all together. It doesn't matter where you're from, what you have, what you don't have. It's sports.
By the final whistle and a 32-12 victory for South Africa, even Ngwenya, the England supporter, was a changed fan, swapping his red jersey for Springbok green. It was only 80 minutes of play, but a new chapter in the Rainbow Nation's continuing story of hope and reconciliation. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Thanks, Anita. For more on South Africa's third Rugby World Cup championship, Iron Mike Mbonye called Cape Town, where he reached the head coach of Nigeria's national men's rugby team, Bronson Weir.
So the third time we won the World Cup, but this is the first time that a black South African captain will be raising their cup. So this is a great thing for our nation and obviously an opportunity for other black and colored players to recognize that they can also lead their country.
How would you assess the game, the Springboks versus England in the final?
Obviously, it was with England lost Sinclair early in the match, but it seems that England struggled in their scrums the whole match through, there was only one scrum that they actually pushed South Africa back, but otherwise South Africa dominated all the time. I think the tactic worked very well with regards to the six forwards on the bench and only two back in the dominant position. I must say that, South Africa put a lot of pressure on England's set phase, and then also obviously the defence. South Africa's defence was so good that they only stood, I think that's about only six tries for this whole tournament, and that means that a lot of emphasis went on the defence. So my analysis on the game is that England couldn't get going because South Africa shut them down, and then obviously taking the game away with them with at the last few minutes, two great tries from the wingers over there.
The Springboks coach, Rassie Erasmus, is quoted as saying that this is the last time he will sit in that dugout as the coach. Does South Africa have a good replacement for him?
Well, yes, I think South Africa's plans is well in place. I think one of his assistants that's currently there will just step into that role, and they'll continue on that road. Just remember that Rassie won't be stepping away completely from the rugby side of things, because he will still be in charge of all rugby in South Africa, so he'll still be in charge of that. So he'll obviously still have an influence on the national team, and I'm sure when it comes to World Cup time, he will step up.
South Africa has set the pace for other African countries. How do you see the game of rugby in the continent?
We need more support from Rugby Africa, and we need more, you know, we need more like relations with South Africa for that matter. So Africa, Rugby Africa needs to do more for teams that are in the lower tiers, like tier 3 and 4, which is Nigeria, Ghana, Ivory Coast, to name a few, to play more often to get to the higher league. The opportunities they're currently giving us are so limited, and so the big key thing is, yeah, once again, we need sponsorship. When Rugby Africa can't come to the front, we need our own funding to go and play abroad versus other teams. So that is the big thing that we need to get right as well in Nigeria rugby. And then obviously with South Africa, to start relationships here with them, so we can send junior sides across to South Africa to come and play in competition, so the boys can start preparing themselves from a young age and not at the age of 25, 26, because that's a bit too late. We need them to start developing at the age around about 13, 14 already.
What is the mood like at home since the Springboks beat England?
I think it's like Christmas again all over. The flags are out. The nation is embracing. They're embracing one another. The people are celebrating in the streets. On my way home, it was very difficult to get home because of the traffic and the jam. People jubilating and standing inside and celebrating outside of the cars.
That's Bronson Weir, the head coach of Nigeria's national men's rugby team. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Cape Town, South Africa.
Sporting greetings. This is Bronson. We are the head coach of the Nigerian national men's rugby team. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
The Springboks of South Africa also scooped up some prizes at the World Rugby Awards, including Team of the Year. Joining us with more details is VOA's Gwen Uten. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Fresh off of lifting the Webb Ellis Cup for a third time, the new world champions hoisted the top three world rugby gongs at a glitzy award ceremony in Tokyo. Along with being named World Rugby Team of the Year, Springboks flanker Pieter Steph Du Toit took home the World Player of the Year award for his outstanding performance in the World Cup tournament.
This is probably one of the best moments in my life. I think it's the two biggest experiences in rugby world you can get. So it's an unbelievable experience for me, and I couldn't be happier at the moment. Seeing what joy it brings to other people, and in South Africa, we went through difficult stages in our country, and we still are. And when you just have strange people walking up to you and tell you, you give me hope and joy. So that motivated me a lot, and I've got three younger brothers as well. So they told me, you're living our dream, so I have to enjoy myself. And by seeing that, it's an unbelievable experience and a privilege for me.
And the 2019 Coach of the Year Award went to Rossi Erasmus, who not only secured the Springboks their third World Cup title, he also led his team to their first rugby championship win since 2007.
Me coaching South Africa, we've got some challenges there, and the way our management, our assistant coaches and our players stood up this specific year with the challenges, I'm really, really proud to be South African.
Coach Erasmus took over the South African team in 2018 when the Springboks were ranked 7th in the world. Now the team is back to form and have reclaimed their position as number one. And Coach Erasmus was quick to point out team captain Siya Kolisi for his help in turning the team around.
We've been in camp for 133 days. I think Siya has been home for 3 days out of 136 days. He's been only home 3 days. So for us, this has been a long journey, and to keep belief and trust and not get frustrated with one another and keep the belief going. For me, it's significant that the boys, no matter what, they always kept South Africa above their own interests, above their own egos, and always kept the Springboks and South Africa's interest up there.
Siya Kolisi accepted the Team of the Year award on behalf of his squad and capped off what has been a stellar year for the Springboks.
We've been together this year for 20 weeks and there hasn't been any bad moments. We've really enjoyed each other's companies. We've irritated each other a little bit, but it's been good irritation. And it was all worth it at the end of the day. We knew what we were fighting for. And the most important thing was just fighting for one another in the team. And it was really amazing. I've really been probably the best team I've ever been part of.
Congratulations to the world champion Springboks. And that is all from me. Sunny, back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. Kudos to the Springboks lifting that trophy for a third time. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. I'm Sunny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Hi, my name is Larry London. Tune in on January 3rd at 1500 Universal for an interesting program on border crossings featuring the songs with time in the title. It's the new year, 2020 is here, and we'll be playing songs from Michael Jackson, Ariana Grande, Justin Bieber, all the hits with the word time in the title. See you at 1500 Universal on January 3rd. Right here on Border Crossings.
Thanks, Larry. I'm Sunny Young, and you're listening to the New Year's Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. And on that note, I want to wish all our Voice of America listeners a very happy new year. Turning to African athletics, Kenya's Kibiwot Kandy came from behind with a late sprint to win the annual New Year's Eve Sal Silvestre 15-kilometer race in Brazil. The 23-year-old Kandy passed Uganda's Jacob Kiplimo in the final stages to win in a course record time of 42 minutes and 53 seconds. Kiplimo finished 1 second back. In the women's race, Kenya scored another victory, with marathon world record holder Bridget Koske winning by more than a minute. Bridget clocked 48 minutes and 54 seconds. She was competing in her first race since setting a new women's marathon world record of 2 hours, 14 minutes and 4 seconds at the Chicago Marathon last October. I think there's a very good chance we'll see Bridget competing for Kenya in the women's marathon at the 2020 Olympics in Japan. Now, the men's and women's marathons were originally scheduled to take place in Tokyo at the Olympic Games, but because of concerns about the heat, Olympic officials decided to move the marathon events as well as the race walks to the cooler climate of Sapporo, Japan. I've been chatting with the energetic Andy Edwards about some of the 2019 highlights in world athletics. Energetic Andy has provided expert analysis and reporting on the Sunny Side of Sports for 20 years. And Andy says he caught up with a top British distance runner to get her view on moving the Olympic marathons to Sapporo.
Well, on my travels for the sunny side of sports throughout 2019, I happened to meet at Frankfurt Marathon, actually, in October, a leading British woman runner about this change of venue. Now, Steph Twell in Frankfurt ran the Olympic qualifying time. She did very well. She is a Scot. She broke the Scottish record, and that had been held by someone who some of your listeners who follow athletics for a long time may remember, Liz McColgan, who won the 1991 World 10,000 metre title. So Steph Twell has been consistent. She's run in two Olympics at 10,000 metres, but I think now she's found her event, and that's the marathon. So she is looking forward. Selection for the Olympics not absolutely guaranteed, but she's certainly in the driving seat. Now, her view was the switch from Tokyo to Sapporo. She approves of that, and she's happy with the change.
From what I've heard, the temperature is still between 25 and 26 degrees compared to maybe the 30 degrees to 32 that they were expecting in Tokyo. So for me, it's going to be new challenges compared to my normal climate at home, living in Britain. So I've got to prepare with humidity and heat training, and those tools I'm going to have to learn quite quickly now. I'm quite a quick learner, but if things do go well, then absolutely I'd love to be racing for Great Britain in the marathon. I think the Japanese running scene's insane and fabulous, so I would love to experience that at Olympic Games and just focus on my internal performance and having the best impact I can have at an Olympic Games. I've been to two already, and for me, I want to see, is it the 10K or the marathon? But I think it is more likely to be the marathon.
Andy, the athletics and sports landscape is never quiet. How do you see a big issue such as the recent four-year ban imposed on Russia by the World Anti-Doping Agency turning out?
Well, this is a story which is not going away, and not just because that at present Russia as a country is banned, and if we're looking in particular at athletics, banned from sending teams for the next two Summer Olympics. That's Tokyo and Paris in 2024. As is now the case, individual athletes may still compete as what is called neutrals. And if you follow competitions such as the Diamond League on the circuit in the summer, we see Russian athletes competing with vests saying that they are neutral, as long as it's been shown, or they can prove, they have not been part of any doping scheme. Of course, Russia and their Federation for Athletics and Olympics will be saying one thing. WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, will be saying another. It's not going away. And I think we have to be fair in saying that performance-enhancing doping is a problem that's affected many countries throughout the world. I will just say this, Sonny, drawing upon my own experience, just over 30 years ago, the Berlin Wall came down, and I'm a German speaker. I was working for a British newspaper, The Observer, and went with a colleague. Well, the autumn of 1989, the wall came down, and in March, right after the World Cross Country of that year, I and my colleague went to what was still called the GDR, East Germany, and still a kind of functioning state, and did stories on what we came to find and had first-hand testimony from those involved in was state-sponsored drug-taking. And we were in places like the Institute of Sport in Leipzig and others, and there the head of the institute, who's since died, but Professor Hermann Buhl, actually said, "We did not administer the drugs here, but we could tell the coaches," and he was talking about a spread of sports, not just track and field, "when drugs should be taken." And his view was, "Oh, well, steroids don't do you any problems." Well, of course, later on in the GDR, there have been many cases, say, of girls, prepubescent girls, swimmers, being given drugs thinking they were vitamin pills and having a lot of subsequent health problems. And in fact, on athletics, we've had one athlete changing sex because of the heavy dose of steroids. So that shows the darker side. And the GDR was a one-party state. That just shows if you're going to have state-sponsored drug taking, you can do it in a one-party state. It's more complicated elsewhere. But the story over Russia is not going to go away anytime soon.
Andy, let's end this review of the athletics year on a positive note. A development I'm very much aware of is the rise of road races taking place in Africa. This looks big, Andy, with every sign of getting bigger. What do you think?
Well, I think simply it's great, Sonny. I mean, when you alerted me to this and you kindly sent me a link to an article, and it was talking about the growth of road races in a whole stack of African countries, from the north, a series of races, shorter distances, not all marathons, in Morocco and elsewhere, and talking about Noelle El-Moutawakil. I remember she won the women's 400-meter hurdles in 1984. She's now a leading supporter of these races. And also West Africa, Nigeria's got road races, and Ivory Coast, Côte d'Ivoire. And interesting to see that they are starting to get IAAF World Athletics labels. Now, if I just put that in context, in terms of road racing, there's a system that the World Athletics awards gold, silver, and bronze. And then there are many races that don't have any of these awards. And to earn those awards, a race has to, well, clearly a monitor, a reporter, a rapporteur from World Athletics goes and inspects what is available in terms of organization for everybody taking part, but also media facilities, facilities in general, the whole efficiency of the event. And in reading that article and talking about races in Nigeria getting World Athletics silver label, well, I know from my own work in some European races, it means a lot, because if you start getting those labels, you attract more sponsors who can give you more money to develop your event. And indeed, a big name, I've never met him, but I've read his comments over the years, Norrie Williamson from South Africa. And South Africa's road running, especially ultra running series, has been developed for many years. We have the Comrades Marathon, the Two Oceans Marathon, very much ultra racing. But Norrie Williamson was saying, this is big and it's going to get bigger. So it looks a really exciting development to follow in the future.
Finally, Andy, I know you have some personal experience with road races in Africa. Tell our VOA listeners about that.
Well, you know, Sonny, I can't resist a historical link. And just for today, as I sit in the VOA studio in London, underneath my shirt, I'm wearing a T-shirt, which is not unusual for me, but it bears the logo of the Mount Cameroon race, going back to December 1989. And I was lucky enough to be a journalist who got a trip out there. And that, in case anybody doesn't know, Mount Cameroon is, I think it's still classed as an active volcano.
Mm.
It's in the shadow of a town, Boya. And we went there. This is December 1989, a wonderful, wonderful experience. And there's samples of the subsequent races online. You can look on YouTube and see them. And this was one of the great experiences of my life. And normally, Sonny, you know from all your time going to events, if you're a member of the press, you get a kind of dog tag, you know, something to hang around your neck to show you are pressed, you're accredited. Mount Cameroon was different. They gave us a red T-shirt with official on it in white lettering. And I'm quite proud to say the T-shirt fits me to this day. I run in it as I did 30 years ago.
Even after a few washings, Andy?
Yes. The interesting thing, the 1992 shirt has not proved as durable as the December 1989. So, you know, there's a lot to be said for old school cotton. So I wear that proudly to this day and for our review of the year 2019. And the interesting thing, I then got interested, and you know, you go to somewhere, and this is how we met at those World Championships in 1999 in Seville. You start talking to somebody, Sonny, and then they say, oh, well, because there were quite a few British runners taking part who were very good mountain, or as we call them in this country, fell runners, F-E-L-L. Those are the fells. They're not that big mountains, but they're pretty high in Wales and in the north of England. It's very tough running. I've done recreational running there. And these are some very good men and women. They said, oh, we're going on a trip to Algeria in March next year. And this was the Hoggar Desert Ultramarathon, what they call a stage race. So I think it was about 4 days. And I thought, that could be good to cover. So I got some magazine commissions and radio, and I joined them. We met in Geneva in Switzerland. We flew out to Algiers. And from then, I can't remember whether it was bus or something, we went into the Hoggar Desert. And that is quite mountainous, of course, a lot of sand. Fascinating experience. And we saw, I reported on this, 4-day stage race. And of course, it wasn't that soft an event for anybody. I wasn't running, but you got there and you found, well, there are no tents. So we were sleeping rough in the desert each night. And I'm sure many of your listeners will be aware of desert conditions, but I had to learn. Because in the daytime, it was hot. So I was wearing a little sports cap, shorts and T-shirt. I had other kit with me. And I started feeling, I think, heat sickness, dizzy. And we were in the area where there's still Tuareg living, in a Bedouin and Tuareg, who, of course, all dress up. They cover everything. You see the men wearing either black or blue, the big sesh, the robe, the wrap around their head. And someone gave me a green sesh to wear. And I also had like a skiing jacket because I come from Switzerland, and long trousers. As soon as I covered up and in the daytime wore all this gear, the heat was very dry. I could move about. I felt great. I never felt hot. So I understood why the Tuareg covered themselves up. And because it was basic conditions, I mean, in terms of sleeping, you were just told, I mean, we encamped each night, go and find some rocks. And I had my sleeping bag and my sesh, and I put on extra shirts, because in the desert at night, many listeners will know this, but it goes down to freezing point or below. So you had to be warm. And then the sun came up, being Algeria, and we had some kind of cooks with us. It wasn't Cordon Bleu, but the smell of the coffee and that fantastic mixture of Arab, Berber, and that sort of French cuisine, even though it was sort of camping. That Mount Cameroon and the Hoggar Desert Ultramarathon, December 1989 and March 1990, they have remained two of the highlights of my journalistic career.
Thanks, Andy. That's the energetic Andy Edwards reflecting on his memorable journalistic experiences covering road races in Algeria and Cameroon. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the New Year's Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Happy New Year! I encourage our VOA listeners to check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. The address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. You'll see photos and videos, and you can post your comments. So check out the Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page.
Voice of America!
And a few of my Facebook friends in Africa have checked in on the first day of 2020. Magnus Chisholm Onwadiwe, the longtime humble apostle of the Sunny Side of Sports, who's based in Owerri, Nigeria, says simply, goodbye to 2019 and happy sporty new year 2020. The Tokyo Olympics will be the big international sporting event in 2020, and our VOA listeners can mark their calendars. The opening ceremony is July 24th in Tokyo, and the closing ceremony is August 9th. Back to my Facebook friends, Scott M5, no address given, says, happy New Year, Sonny and Dan Friedel. Thank God we have reached 2020 together. Matthew Okoro in Wari, Nigeria, and Matthias Abba, no address given, also send Happy New Year wishes. And that wraps up the New Year's Day edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America engineer Nelson Lopes. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Happy New Year, everyone! And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.